Hello and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week your Extra Movie Butter boys break down the box office, talk about movie news, throw our extra butter on our favorite topics regarding movies, our favorite choices, our favorite everything, and then of course we review the newest movies. This week's new movie is Blue Beetle, which debuted number one at the U.S. box office with $25 million. A little bit of a lackluster kickoff for the new DC universe. Barbie came in at number two with $21 million. Almost $600 million just in the United States alone box office. Barbie's still doing gangbusters money. Oppenheimer coming in at number three, $11 million, $285 million domestic. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem was number four with $8.5 million, $88 million domestic. That's not bad. I think this movie will continue to get these small little chunks of money, and it's going to turn a profit. I'm excited. I liked that movie. I think we all agreed we enjoyed that movie a lot. So looking forward to that movie continuing with its success. Another new release this weekend was the movie Strays. The dog movie featuring vocal talents of like Will Ferrell and Jamie Foxx. And that debuted at number five with $8.2 million. Meg 2, The Trench was number six with $6.8 million. Talk to Me, still in the top 10. At number seven, $3.2 million. $37 million domestic. Now that doesn't seem a lot, but this movie had like a $2 million budget. So for A24, that's a big win. Haunted Mansion, still somehow spooking their way into the top 10 with $3 million, $59 million domestic. Again, we've all had our choice words about that fine flick. Mission Impossible beating out Sound of Freedom at number nine with $2.7 million, and Sound of Freedom rounding out your top 10 with $2.6 million. So, guys, I threw out a lot of numbers, a couple of quick jabs in there thrown by me. JT, what is the tale of the box office?
Yeah, a lot to take in there. Nothing crazy, but I will say, you know, Blue Beetle, I think they were predicting or hoping for a $30 million weekend, and it only got $25. I think I can't wait to get into a review because I have a lot of thoughts about maybe why that is and just about the movie overall. But again, this is a weird, it's one of those weird movies that's stuck in that weird limbo of James Gunn is about to restart the DCEU. Whatever the hell he's going to call it. I think they have another official name that they're calling it DCU, maybe. I don't know.
DCU.
Yeah, so they're calling it a whole new thing. And it's like, this is like, we're in football season. It's like Blue Beetle's trying to make the team. He's out there in training camp. He just had his preseason game. And we're all judging whether or not he's going to make the roster. And this isn't a great opening weekend. So I don't know if you're James Gunn, are you like, yeah, you kind of, this doesn't tell you for sure we need to drop him, or doesn't tell you for sure we got to keep him. I think the longevity will kind of have something to say in that part. But that's the main thing that comes away from me. Strays, I didn't expect to do that well. I saw it this weekend. It was fine. It was fun. It's exactly what you saw on the trailer for about 90 minutes. I can't think the budget on that can't be too big, right? I mean, how much does it cost to make a talking dog? And the dogs are not CG. They're real dogs. You can definitely tell that while you're watching the movie. Talk to Me, I think, is a huge success for A24. They already greenlit the sequel. Glad to see Turtles, like you said, doing really well because I really want that sequel, but it also greenlit. A lot of these things that we're talking about already like have their sequels greenlit. Blue Beetle, on the other hand, I don't know if that's going to get a sequel. I don't know if it's going to make the roster to the new DCU. So we got a lot to talk about that later. But, I mean, really, Blue Beetle's the big thing. Yeah, it beat Barbie, but what, Barbie was in its fifth week? And it's still and it was still close. It wasn't like he destroyed Barbie. So, and Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer and Barbie literally took over the summer, kind of like how Top Gun Maverick did last year, except for there's two movies sharing the pot. That's my thoughts.
Benny, how about you? What is the tale of the box office tell you, sir?
Blue Beetle is fascinating for me as far as its box office performance goes. Like, I never really gave a damn about the box office till I started this podcast, and now I'm like slowly becoming a box office nerd. So what I find about Blue Beetle is, one, our crack researcher Billy is unavailable due to some legal issues.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many international markets are left for Blue Beetle, but it did abysmally worldwide. It made $18 in everywhere it opened outside the U.S. total. That is horrible for an international opening. So if it has opened in all the major markets, and hopefully we can let you know on that if Billy gets released next week. But we're if pulling. It's opened everywhere, this is a huge failure internationally. As far as this domestic box office, when they first started coming out with projections, like on the heels of Flash, they were looking at like, I want to say like $15 million opening for this movie. And then it shot up to 30, and then it ended up right in the middle of the two. So compared to what they were expecting, I don't think it's horrific. Now, the movie is going to lose money regardless in its theatrical window, but it had a budget of $100 million as opposed to like $250 million for The Flash, $400 million for some of these other summer movies. So it will break even probably in the next year or so, where a lot of these huge big name movies that came out this summer will still be losing money. So I don't think it's horrific news for the Blue Beetle, which is not a character anyone knows, which is coming off, you know, a lot of negativity with the Flash and things like that. So I would say for all the headwinds that it had going against it, I think it did good. However, the international box office rollout for this bad boy was brutal, at least so far.
Yeah, I agree with you, Benny. I mean, Blue Beetle was originally, this movie was going to be a streaming movie. And then it went from being a streaming movie to a theatrical release back to a potential streaming movie. And then they said, you know what? I think they saw that they had something special there, because there's a lot to like with Blue Beetle. And we'll talk about that later. I do think that DC Studios is just a shit show right now. And, you know, whether this is James Gunn's new vision or this was already a movie that was planned as part of the previous DCEU, which I'm inclined to believe, and they went back and kind of maybe cut out some potential cameos or mentions that they might have had of the previous DCEU, and basically cut it down to things like, oh, Superman is in Metropolis, Flash is in, you know, because there's other superheroes mentioned in this movie, but there's nothing specific about like who's playing them or what universe that this is kind of set in. So I was hoping for bigger numbers after having seen Blue Beetle. But I'm also like, I'm superhero fatigued. I'm DC fatigued for sure. And like going to see, aside from having to do this podcast with you, I would have seen this movie in theaters just out of sheer morbid curiosity to see how they're going to introduce like the new DCU. And so, but I'm kind of a few and far between, and the box office kind of shows that this is a lighter box office. There wasn't like really any like super heavy hitters. There was, you know, Barbie and Oppenheimer, which are still getting their large chunks of money. And then, yeah, this is the new superhero movie. I hope good word of mouth spreads about this and this movie does better. But yeah, Billy, our intern, who hopefully, again, if you want to donate to Billy's legal fee, just reach out to Benny on Twitter. He's at Crush the Plums. We'll definitely get you an update on Billy's legal battle. But
I don't know who Billy is. This is the first time hearing about him.
Yeah, he's our intern. He usually does all the research and puts together the notes for me.
Goatee.
Oh, I've not heard of it. I've been out of the loop.
Well, he's always behind the scenes. I mean, this is an audio podcast only. So yeah, of course you can't see him, but he's there.
Okay, good enough.
So Blue Beetle. Yeah, it did fine. Maybe word of mouth helps to propel this. But I did look it up, and internationally, like so far, Blue Beetle, and this is a tentpole like superhero movie, it's $46 million worldwide. So it only made $18 million outside of the United States, which is terrible. So it's going to be interesting to see how Blue Beetle progresses. But yeah, with the stink of the Flash, I mean, it must not be official that James Gunn has full control of this studio yet, because I would have thought that like, if he believed in this character and wanted him as part of his universe, he would have pushed this movie opening. I don't know. I mean, just a weird.
Well, I would push back, say August is like the dumping ground for the movies that you knew weren't going to make a crap load of money, but had a chance to make some money. Yeah. August was always kind of like, that's where you get the Megs, is in August. The Expendables back in the day would be like the end of August. Because they're like, oh, one last little quick action summer movie, but it's not going to be grade A level like Top Gun or Oppenheimer, all that stuff. So it makes sense a little bit to throw it in there.
One final comment, like, and this is just my personal opinion. I have no background on it. I don't think James Gunn had, I think he learned from The Flash that just saying this movie is a lame duck kills it. So I think he was trying to make it sound like this was part of the new thing without directly saying it. I don't think this in any way tied into what his plans were going forward. He may use the same actor if he really liked him, but I don't think this has anything to do with the reboot at all.
And yeah, I was actually surprised that Strays didn't do a little bit better. But yeah, I mean, a rated R comedy about, you know, raunchy talking dogs. Yeah. Oh, okay. I can see that coming out at number five. JT, was it funny or was it just what you would expect from like a Will Ferrell talking dog movie?
It was entertaining, but it wasn't like laugh out loud, you know, like it's not like I saw The Hangover with dogs. It's not like going to be a comedy classic going forward. If you like dogs and you just want a decent laugh, listen, you don't need to run out to theaters and see it. It's 100% when this is on Netflix or whatever app you have and it's free. Yeah, give it a watch. You'll have a good time for 90 minutes. It's got a lot of poop and pee humor and dog humor, and has some fun things that weren't in the trailer that I did appreciate. But at the same time, it's pretty much what you see in trailers, what you get for 90 minutes. So watch the trailer. If you laughed during the trailer, go ahead and watch the movie. You'll laugh during the movie. If you didn't laugh at all, maybe don't watch the movie.
Fair enough. Well, we're going to move on from the box office. And once again, we have sad news. And we'll talk about the passing of another actor. And this is Ron Cephas Jones, who just recently passed at 66. Mostly a television actor. Was in the Netflix show Luke Cage, both seasons. Had a huge role in This Is Us. And also contributed, you know, he was in He Got Game, most recently in Dolomite Is My Name. A talented actor, 66 years old, still, I mean, I'm getting to that age where 66 still seems very obtainable and still feels very somewhat young. I mean, the last person we were talking about, you know, Alan Alda died at 89. It's like, okay, that's getting up there in age, but 66 still feels young. And then you learn that he like many of these Hollywood stars who have been sick, kept these, you know, ailments kind of quiet and didn't really choose to kind of broadcast that they were, you know, in a battle for it. So it's kind of a sad passing. And, you know, of course, our thoughts and prayers go out to his family. But more importantly, again, we say this every week because it seems like every week we lose an actor or actress. But it is always kind of a damper when we lose talent. And he was definitely a talent. So definitely wanted to include that in a little bit. Do you guys have anything to add regarding the passing of Ron Cephas Jones?
When you mentioned him before the show, like, I did see this stuff on Twitter, but I'm not super familiar with his work, and I haven't seen most of the things that you mentioned. I did see Dolomite Is My Name, which I really enjoyed, but I don't remember. You know, I didn't watch This Is Us. I don't think I watched Luke Cage, maybe the first two episodes. So, you know, listen, he obviously had a great career, especially later in life. He, like I said, even though he was younger, he was working on great stuff. So, yeah, rest in peace, man.
My wife watched This Is Us, and it's one of those things that, like, I never sit down and engaged with the show, but occasionally I would be in the room while she was watching it. So I have seen scenes of it, and he was really, really good in that show. Like, he brought some serious drama to that show. So, I mean, it's one of those things, the world is always less when it loses talent. And not familiar with his work, but from the little bits that I did see, he had a lot of talent. And so it's always a sad thing when it goes. And, you know, peace to his family, and I hope they're doing all right.
Well, folks, we are going to cut our new segment a little short. Our next segment, which is always our favorite, we're going to be talking about best superhero origin stories. Or superhero origin movies. But after that, during our review for Blue Beetle, we decided to call in a couple of pros. We got the one and only Jesse Swift from the Flickin' Reel Network. And then we got the outlaw, John Rocha, back. Now, he saw JTE's comments and was like, okay, dude, I'm volunteering to come on your show. So we're excited. We've got a DC aficionado, and we've got John Rocha coming up. So stay tuned. On to our next segment.
These kids have got energy. These kids have got attitude.
It ain't time to go. You trying to leave us?
These kids have got 12 hours to drive two adults out of their minds. Bebe's kids.
We don't die. We multiply.
Pee-wee, put it down. Pee-wee.
It's animation with an attitude. Rated PG-13. Starts Friday, July 31st at theaters everywhere.
Kick off the NFL season today with DirecTV and Circuit City. When you buy a DirecTV system at Circuit City and subscribe to NFL Sunday Ticket and DirecTV's Total Choice Platinum programming, you'll score 3 free months of Total Choice Platinum and see DirecTV's official program guide, a savings of over $250. With NFL Sunday Ticket on DirecTV, you'll get over 200 regular season games. That's up to 13 games every Sunday. Save today at Circuit City.
Now, folks, is our favorite segment, the extra movie butter. And because we're reviewing Blue Beetle in our next segment, which is an origin story of a very unknown hero, we decided that we are going to talk about our favorite origin story superhero movies. Now, some of these you've heard of, and you've probably heard about us talk about them before. And I'm sure with this group, we're going to get some really obscure ones. But either way, I think the best person to kick us off with this would be the one and only Benny Hamlin. Benny, throw us some superhero origin story movies.
So I think the most important superhero origin movie is Iron Man. But everyone has talked at length about Iron Man. I'm not going to worry about Iron Man. We've all talked enough about it. So I'm going to go with three movies that are, I think, superhero origin movies because of what the series became, but they in and of themselves were not necessarily superhero movies at the start. So first off, I'm going to go with John Wick.
Oh.
So John Wick 1 is a masterpiece of an action movie. Absolutely love it. But as the series has gone on and it's gotten more fantastical and absurd, I think John Wick has moved into the category of superhero. You know, sure. he has superpowers. He can't be killed, things like that. So I would say in the last decade, the John Wick 1, I think, is the best superhero origin movie that has been made. So, and then number two, you obviously have the original Howard the Duck, the movie that kicked off the MCU that people ignore as kicking off the MCU.
Here we go.
Yeah, and you can criticize it as however you want, but this is a Marvel superhero movie unlike any other. It did its own thing. It did its own thing unabashedly, and it still works if you watch it today in its own little way, in my personal opinion.
The Willard Hoyt classic.
Hey, I think it's worth it, man.
Howard the Duck, what you gonna do about it? Listen, I had to be adjusted as a kid. I wore the tape out. You'll get no arguments from me.
So I would say those are my two sort of offbeat superhero origin movies. I would say if you're asking me my favorite one of all time, and I think this is a little debate of whether or not it's an origin movie because the character is already the superhero when we enter the movie, but you get his origin throughout the movie, and that's Batman 1989. Mm. It's still up there for me as one of the greatest superhero movies that has ever been made. I love the movie unapologetically, but it does a really good job of assuming you know who Batman is. We're running with Batman, but in little flashbacks and little pieces, we also get to understand his origin story in that universe. And so to me, that's always going to be probably my favorite superhero origin movie, even though he's kind of already Batman when we get in there.
Well, you also kind of, I mean, as far as origin goes, you get the origin of the Joker, at least the Jack Napier Joker. So, yeah, I would count that as an origin story. Absolutely. JT, toss out some origin movies for us, pal.
Listen, you know, he threw out Batman 1989. I gotta give love to Superman the movie, the Richard Donner film, because even directors today, like Patty Jenkins with Wonder Woman, Nolan with Batman Begins, all these directors, Bryan Singer when he did X-Men, they all say that is like the Bible, the playbook is Richard Donner's Superman. How do you introduce a superhero, give his backstory? I mean, that first movie does so much. I love that watching some of the special features, Richard Donner would say the first 30 minutes is a sci-fi film. The next 30 minutes is in Kansas. It's almost like a John Ford film. And then the last third of the film is in Metropolis, in the city, and it's straight up a Superman movie. To me, that three-act structure is just like perfect for introducing a character. Also, he introduced the idea of casting an unknown or somebody who's not super famous and surrounding him with much more famous actors. Marlon Brando, Gene Hackman, Ned Beatty. He's all these people are around Christopher Reeve, who's now Superman. We all know Christopher Reeve as Superman. We all kind of know Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. And Batman, Christian Bale was not a household name when he did Batman Begins. But you throw Michael Caine in there, Morgan Freeman, Liam Neeson. It's the template of what I think the smartest way of making a superhero film is. So got to give a shout out to Richard Donner, Superman. I still think it's one of the best. I want to go with some of the more recent Superman origin stories, which I feel like did a great job. I go back to Shang-Chi, and I think Shang-Chi is probably one of the MCU's more successful origin stories. It gave us Tony Leung as the father, and that relationship really kind of grounded the movie, but is very fun. It had great martial arts, great cinematography. I just remember walking in that movie being like, damn, this is how you introduce a new character in phase 4 or 5, whatever it was.
And then they promptly buried
him. Well, that's the problem. Yeah. But they took the director, and he's doing the next Avengers film. So yes. they gave him the upgrade. They're like, you know what you're doing. We're giving you Avengers.
I love that you I had Shang-Chi in my list too.
Okay, yeah. Great. Talk love about it. Yeah. What do you love about it?
For every reason that you just said right there, like you're basically introducing like the Bruce Lee of the MCU is basically what Shang-Chi is, right? What the character in the comics is kind of based on. He looks just like Bruce Lee. And it's like, okay, well, how is this like the MCU at this point in time is like people's powers? Like you can't just be good at like karate. Like that's not going to hold up in the MCU now. But then all of a sudden they introduce like the Mandarin and the fantastical like rings that he possesses. And it's like, oh shit. Like that is exactly like I walked out of that movie and was like, yes, this is immediately made its way into my top 5. And it's so rewatchable. And the music hits in that movie. Like it took a little bit from all the like good Marvel movies and what made them successful and kind of blended it all into one. And it was, it was just a fantastic introduction. And just bring back Shang-Chi, please bring him back, put him in the next Captain America movie. Sam Wilson's gotta be putting together a team of Avengers. Justice for Simu.
And do you know what that movie did that I don't think any other superhero movie could have possibly did? It made the Mandarin from Iron Man 3 work.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. The way they tied that in. And, you know, going back to Benny's Iron Man, obviously the beginning of the MCU, I really like First Avenger. I don't think it's perfect, but it did a great job of establishing Chris Evans as Captain America. I think the biggest issue with that film is the middle when it kind of just fast forwards to World War II for the most part. You could have made a whole movie just on that. But the way that movie begins and the way it ends with him crashing a plane, sacrificing himself for the greater good, it made me excited for Captain America. And it's a movie I do go back to. Joe Johnson directed it. You know, he worked on Raiders. So it definitely has that feel at times. While I don't think it's one of the best origin films, it has one of the better scores of all the MCU films.
Yep.
And it gave you the heart and soul of the Avengers in a lot of ways is Captain America. And I think they did a good job of establishing him better than Incredible Hulk. That's for sure. So I got to give, you know, Captain America a shout out. I'll do one more film just to get outside of the MCU because everything's been MCU pretty much. I'll give a little bit of love for Man of Steel because they did something so different. And I think Zack Snyder's, I think it's his best film in the DCEU when he was working on all his films. I like it better than Batman v Superman. I love the Justice League you know, the 4 hour cut, but even at 4 hours, there's some stuff that can be taken out of there. I think Man of Steel, the Hans Zimmer score, again, taking an actor nobody really knows, surrounding him with Russell Crowe, Michael Shannon, Amy Adams, doing that Superman model. And it was the first time I saw a Superman movie with updated special effects technology where he just let loose. And a lot of people get angry because like the last 30 minutes was like just insane action. I was like, yeah, no shit. That's what I want. I've never seen it like this before. I saw Superman Returns. He didn't throw a punch in that entire movie. I want to see Superman punch people through freaking buildings, gas stations. I want everything exploding. It was the first time I felt the scale of what a Superman action sequence could be with Man of Steel. I love the Christopher Reeve films. I love him, you know, repairing the dam and all that stuff, but it wasn't like it wasn't the Superman. You watch it, they're miniatures. They're special effects. They're dated. Right. They're handcuffed by what they have at the time. And I love that film. Might be one of my all-time favorite comic movies, but I do really like Man of Steel. It's one of those movies that have grown on me more and more throughout the years.
Uh-oh. A little, if I can throw something in on Man of Steel, like, you know, clearly in hindsight, the DCEU as a whole did not work. But if you take like Man of Steel and then you sort of overlay it with looking at it from Batman's perspective at the beginning of Batman v Superman, that is some of like the best superhero anything ever caught on TV. Whether or not the whole movie as a whole worked, Man of Steel plus that first like 15 minutes of BVS, beautiful. You cannot get better than that in a superhero movie. I don't care what came after it. It was worth the attempt to get that stretch.
You know, what's interesting is, you know, we got a kind of origin film with The Flash, and he also was there the day Superman was fighting Zod. Can we intercut all three of those movies? The Flash saving not saving the kid, Ben Affleck not saving his friend, and then Superman and Michael Shannon going crazy. Like, it's crazy how much has happened on that one day. And that's one thing I enjoyed about The Flash, even though it made no money and it'll be on Blu-ray a week from now already.
See, I actually did not like that part of The Flash where it showed him on, you know, we'll just call it, you know, Superman Zod Day. To Benny's point, I very much enjoyed that segment. That is 15 minutes of like fine superhero film right there in that opening. And then it was just kind of like, oh, and you're going to shoehorn in The Flash. Like, okay. How many other people? Like, was Wonder Woman there too? And we just didn't see her because she can move so fast. Like, there's just, I don't know. That segment didn't work for me, but the beginning of Batman versus Superman absolutely did. And to your point with Man of Steel, until that movie came out, I was so lukewarm on Superman.
You and the Christopher Reeve movies, huh?
Even them. Yep.
Wow.
I mean, I've always loved Batman, but Superman is just like a perfect.
He's a fascist
character. Well, you know, and what I mean by that is like the only way to kill him is you have to have a rock from a planet that doesn't exist anymore. So, I mean, he just has all the abilities and very little weaknesses, but Cavill brought like weakness to him. He brought vulnerability. Yeah. Like, it actually made it seem like he doesn't want to be, he wants to be Clark Kent. He doesn't want to be Superman. And and I've said this before, and all of the other Superman iterations, it's always Superman who's playing at Clark Kent. This one was Clark Kent, basically, who's playing at being Superman. And so I liked it so much more. So yeah, I'll absolutely give some love to Man of Steel. I have that on my list too.
Let me ask you this. When's the last time you saw the original Richard Donner Superman, the movie?
I mean, what was it? 2 years ago, the Schmodown? Was it last year?
Maybe. Yeah.
2 years ago. Now. Yeah. 2 years okay.
ago. So you watched them?
I watched all of them like twice through.
Okay.
Yeah. Just curious. Just to kind of, I mean, I like Superman too, maybe a little bit more. I think it's fun watching like Zod in that type of context when you have like the Michael Shannon Zod, which is just this huge destructive force. And then you have Zod and he's like, this is Planet Houston. You know, I think it's kind of funny, like going back and retrospectively seeing like both versions of Zod. But yeah, I was never that high on Superman. I, I very much enjoyed Man of Steel. I liked Henry Cavill as Superman. I liked everything that we got in the EU, minus the, you know, CGI removed mustache. But on my list, the next one, I do have Batman Begins. You mentioned that earlier. I think that that's a fine version of Batman. I think it's it was dark for like the time for Batman too, because you were coming off of like the Joel Schumacher, like neon lights, you know, bright scenery, very like tongue in cheek, campy Batman. And this kind of grounded it, and it made it, and it gave like legitimate like explanations for things like, oh, his bat suit is basically like a tactical like armor that they were attempting to sell to the military, but the military just didn't want to pay the price. And like the Batmobile was such an unconventional Batmobile, it was a tank.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it was so like, I very much enjoyed like Batman Begins and just the whole Nolan take on Batman. I'll defend all three of those movies. Obviously the Dark Knight being possibly one of the greatest superhero movies of all time, but I love the Dark Knight Rises. I think it's a ton of fun. I think Tom Hardy's Bane is seriously underrated.
He's awesome. He's the best thing in the movie.
He is the best thing in the movie.
I'll say this in case our audience hasn't listened to my older podcast. I was not a fan of the Batman. That movie had a lot of problems. I found it boring. And he turns into a squirrel monkey at one point and just is gliding around like he's in some ultimate sports. Not a big fan of the Batman.
I'm going to blow up your world because that's my favorite Batman movie. I mean, that's a topic for another day, but another day. I love the Batman because it's I feel it's the most grounded. It's in my eyes, like I like things a little more like realistic. And
I mean, the Dark Knight is pretty grounded
a little bit.
I mean, compared to all the Burton and Joel Schumacher movies, to me that was the perfect balance. Here's the thing about the Batman. I just want to go on a Batman
lay it on me. Let's hear it.
The first time he goes to the nightclub to like talk to the Penguin, he goes and knocks on the front door, like as he's a kid on Halloween asking for some candy. And the guard opens the door and they're like, oh, it's the Batman. Batman doesn't walk up to the front door of a bad guy's house and knock on the door. I feel like if I was on a subway in Gotham and I was with my cousin and he was visiting from out of town, and we were on the subway, and he's like, who's that guy down there with the bat suit hanging outside the club? I'm like, oh, this guy calls himself the Batman. He's a real wacko. At no point is Robert Pattinson's Batman trying to be a ninja of stealth and surprise. One of the most genius things I think Christopher Nolan did was he made it so Batman was like, the first time Batman goes out and takes on some criminals, it's like a horror film. They're in the port with all the bad guys are like walking around and he's taking them out. And it felt like you're watching a horror movie, like something would flash by. And the Batman, he just walks up to the door, knocks and says, hey guys, can I come in? It's me, the Batman.
But in that Batman's defense and Robert Pattinson's Batman's defense, this is his, like, he's just been Batman for one
year.
Yes. So he hasn't learned that like stealth and like shadow and attack, you know, in secret. Like he hasn't learned that yet. Like he's still walking around beating people up, like in this movie.
Anyway, that's just one of the many, many problems I have with that movie. Maybe we'll do a special episode. Just put the Batman on trial.
I think we should. Oh, the trial of the Batman. Okay. I like this better than you guys watch Lightning Jack. Billy, take a note. The trial of Batman. My next one, I put in X-Men First Class.
Yes, good choice.
Yeah, I love the X-Men series, but then it got you know, X3, you know, The Last Stand, and that was awful. And then you had X-Men Origins Wolverine, and that was just even worse. So it just started to seem like the X-Men were just like, oh crap, you're just shoehorning in these movies, and like you've kind of already ruined some of these characters. And then bam, X-Men First Class comes out. They take it away from Bryan Singer, they take it out of Brett Ratner's hands. Right now you get Mangold in there, and Mangold just sinks into it. You could tell that he loves these characters. And we get
Matthew Vaughn.
Oh, Matthew Vaughn. Excuse me. Yes. Matthew Vaughn. Excuse me. Yes. Mangold was Logan. Excuse me. Matthew Vaughn. And Matthew Vaughn has The Kingsman was one of the most like original movies. The first one, the second one, I can defend the second one, but it's a huge step down from the first. But yes, sank his teeth into this one. And I absolutely adore this movie. Even the like cameo of like, of Hugh Jackman, when they go to like recruit him for the initial team and he's like, yeah, go fuck yourself. Like that, like just that cameo right there sent the statement that like, okay, this is a different type of X-Men. They're going in a different direction and mutants is kind of a new thing in the world. And so I dug it. I loved it. It's follow-up sequel. Days of Future Past is a great one too.
Great one too. Let me just say, what's great about it is it's not about really the origin of the X-Men team. It's more about the origin of Xavier and Magneto.
Yes.
So originally they were going to make a Magneto Origins film, just like Wolverine Origins. And they scrapped that and they took parts of that and put it into the First Class and expanded it to more of a team slash. I mean, the scene where he takes on the Nazis in the bar, Michael Fassbender as Magneto, is just so damn good. Fassbender is one of my favorite actors to ever play a comic book person.
Yeah.
He's not a hero. I guess a comic book hero. Him as Magneto is fantastic. I don't think you'll ever get better casting as him as Magneto. I like Ian McKellen, but I always saw Magneto as a younger guy, or older, but still like intimidating. He can still kick your ass. So Fassbender just absolutely took that role on. I love him in Days of Future Past too. Like,
yeah.
Even the last film, the last one they made, what was it called? Dark Phoenix?
Dark Phoenix.
I can enjoy that movie just for the Fassbender Magneto stuff. So he does some really cool stuff in that movie.
I'm a defender of Dark Phoenix. I enjoyed Dark Phoenix. I thought it was great. But no, yeah, exactly. That scene in the bar where they're in Argentina and he's hunting down the old Nazis, like, so freaking good. And what was cool about X-Men First Class 2 was it wasn't dealing with like the conventional, here's Cyclops, here's Wolverine, like here's Rogue, here's Jean Grey. It didn't really delve into that until much later into the movies. But this one was like, here's Banshee. And everyone's like, who the shit is Banshee? But if you like, yeah, if you go back and you're like, oh yeah, this like this is a completely different team. Like,
I watched Beast 90s was kind cartoon. Of the only one.
Yeah,
I watched the 90s cartoon and Banshee was in there, so I knew who Banshee was.
Banshee was awesome, and then Havoc. You know, again, if you know the whole story, you know that Havoc is, you know, Cyclops' brother, and yeah, that is later fleshed out in the movies. But still, it was a cool team. My only beef with that movie is they introduced this character Darwin, right?
Yeah,
whose powers makes him basically gives the ability to adapt to anything. And then like the first real challenge he has, he's taken out like that. And it's like, oh, that was such a cool, like you could have gone so far with that character. And they kill him. And like the first time he encounters the one and only Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
Also brilliant casting as Sebastian Shaw in that movie.
So good. So good. Bacon's just eating up the screen in that movie.
Bacon's just sizzling.
Yep.
I also had Shang-Chi in the Legend of the Ten Rings. I had Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Miles Morales origin story,
Sam Raimi's Spider-Man is great.
That was on my list. Yep. I had Deadpool in there because I'm just a sucker for these mutants.
yeah, I guess so.
And then just to wrap it up, I put in Black Panther and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, both really well done.
Black Panther, not quite an origin story. I started thinking about that one as I put it in, because at this point he was already established. We saw him in Civil War, his squad, like it's a continuation of that story, but still it was kind of an origin story for the character of the Black Panther and how he became the king of Wakanda. So all brilliantly done movies.
Like we also were introduced to Spider-Man in Civil War. Mm-hmm. So when Homecoming came, he was just already Spider-Man. Some like we don't need to see Batman's parents killed again. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
We're getting to that point now where it's shorthand. Let's just get right into the movie. And I really enjoy that aspect.
Well, there was a time in the MCU, you had such faith in the MCU that you could just shoehorn in Spider-Man for 10-minute scene in Civil War. And you're like, damn, it's like he's been here the whole time. We trust you. And then he gets his own movie and it's like, yeah, exactly. We don't need to see him get bit by the spider. He just casually mentions it in a scene. So the MCU used to have that kind of sway where you could introduce Black Panther in a 10-minute segment in Civil War, Spider-Man. Now it's like everyone gets their own Disney Plus series or their own origin stories, and we got to know everything about everything with this person before we even get more of them. So, yeah, I'm still lobbying that Shang-Chi needs to appear in more stuff. Come on, you got Benedict Wong, and don't get me wrong, Wong is like the best character in the MCU, but that guy shows up in everything. He's in every movie. He's in every Disney Plus series. Like, come on, get Simu Liu a little juice, man. The guy was just in Barbie. He's just in the biggest movie of the year. Come on, cut the guy some slack.
Agree.
Well, folks, we're going to wrap up because coming up next is our review of Blue Beetle with the one and only John Rocha and the illustrious Jesse Swift. Stay tuned.
Without an opposable thumb, a species cannot advance. It cannot organize. It cannot create. It cannot snack. Therefore, they get no nachos. Presenting a new order of nachos from Taco Bell. Cheesy. New beefy. And the most evolved nacho, Nacho Supreme with sour cream. Taco Bell nachos. It's cool to be human.
The toughest, fastest, strongest ninjas are headed straight for an incredible adventure. They're fighting an international crime ring.
They're just kids.
That's left the police powerless and the FBI defenseless.
We should run. We should hide. We should kick their butts.
Now, these three young heroes are taking matters into their own hands. Three Ninjas, rated PG, parental guidance suggested. National sneak preview this Saturday.
Welcome back, folks, and now is the time for our spoiler, or we'll start with non-spoiler review, Blue Beetle, and then we're going to very quickly go into spoilers, because we're joined, of course, by the legendary Golden Mike himself, John Rocha, CEO of the Outlaw Nation, folks.
First of all, thanks for having me on. Second of all, it was a thing where they asked you, do you want to put something down? And I was like, ah, sure, let's have some fun. So hopefully it's not annoying anybody that I wrote that down, CEO of the Outlaw Nation.
Are you not the CEO of Outlaw Nation?
You are the CEO.
I am, but I'm also the only, like, full employee of the Outlaw Nation. I mean, like, let's get real. You know, everyone else is, you know, like, part-timer. I'm the full-time, only full-timer. So.
Well, you can have that flex then. I'm the owner, I'm the CEO, I'm the CFO. Yeah, you can get all those titles into it. No problem, absolutely.
All the people you respect who do that. Yeah, absolutely. Done and done.
Hey, if you can flex it, go for it.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, yeah. But I'm excited to be here, excited to talk to you guys, excited to get into stuff on Blue Beetle and correct JT on his horrible interpretation of the film. And so I'm ready. I'm ready to go here, man.
Well, let's kick off with you then, man. Non-spoiler review of Blue Beetle.
Overall thoughts, yeah.
Okay, overall thoughts, I thought it was a surprising breath of fresh air. Amidst all the disappointing recent releases from DC, I fully went in there with my arms folded, being like, oh god, I hope this is okay. We rarely get a shot to lead a superhero film. It would suck that we finally get one and it's not a good movie. And I came out of that thing just with a big grin on my face. Really enjoyed Zolo Maduena's performance. I mean, he is a man now. That's no longer the kid on Cobra Kai. He is a man, full-on man, and you felt it throughout the movie. Really loved the casting of the family and the chemistry they had together and the way they weaved the family into the story. You know, normally you'd have a person who is like struggling with becoming a hero, and it's like one or two people in their lives. The entire family had something to say about this, and it was really incredible the way they weaved them in and made them work and had the chemistry, and it was believable. And then the stuff with Nana was fantastic. Stuff with Uncle Rudy was fantastic. And I thought Susan Sarandon, for being an underwritten villain, a two-dimensional villain, I mean, who doesn't want to take over the world? Pinky and Brain do that all the time. I thought she did a really good job with what the limited amount of time that she had on screen. And Raul Max Trujillo as Carapax, I thought, did a nice job as well. Not the best actor, but overall, I thought he did a good job for what they wanted the film to do. Does it fall apart a little bit in the third act? Yes, but everything is so good in those first two acts that for me, I was just having a really great time watching the movie. So for me, it really, really worked, especially in a film that I did not expect much from. So,
No, because I enjoyed this movie as much as I enjoyed this movie. We're going to have JT review last, and we're going to go to Benny because I think Benny's going to have a nice positive review about this too. Overall thoughts on the movie, Benny.
So I texted Moose right before he went, and I said, you know, I saw the movie and I had a smile on my face the whole time. So yeah. I'll say that the movie is nothing but joyous. It is nothing but fun. There are parts of the movie where you definitely roll your eyes and you're like, oh my God, come on. But it doesn't take away from the joy of the movie. Like you still smile even when there are parts that are just absurd. And there's a lot of superhero tropes that have probably been done better in other movies. But I don't care. The movie doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to work for what it is. And I went in and I sat down a movie much like Rogue that I was begrudgingly seeing. I was like, there's no way this is going to be good.
Yeah.
And you know, I left like that was a good 2 hours at the movie, you know. That was worth paying for my popcorn for, man. So I loved the family. I thought they were hilarious. And typically the families of the superheroes, they're either like downtrodden and they're miserable, yeah, and they're there to just point out how horrible it is to be a superhero. And this one did the exact opposite. There was, you know, it's like, hey, this is what's great about being a superhero. You can lift people up. You can be lifted up. And you usually don't get that in a superhero movie. So I really appreciated that. Now, I'll get into my nitpicks when we do the spoilers. But overall, man, it was an enjoyable, fun time at the movies.
So Benny texts me like 10 minutes as I'm like before I walk into the theater. And he was like, dude, I had a smile on my face the whole time. And I went into this with like very like limited expectations. I like the character Blue Beetle, and I'm a comic book nut. We've talked right about this all the time. And I love the character Blue Beetle. And this is like the third iteration. Jaime Reyes is the third iteration of the Blue Beetle. But he's by far like the best, even in like comic book wise, like he's the most fun to be able to like kind of explore. And I mentioned it to these guys. Like I kind of went into this almost with like a morbid curiosity, like, okay, let's see the new DC universe. You know, I mean, DC shit the bed over the last couple of years. Really, they have. And you just look at like the Flash debacle. And I actually think that hurt this movie quite a bit. But then just like Benny, I had a smile on my face the whole damn time. And yes, there are so many superhero tropes and so many paint by numbers, superhero repeats that you see in so many other movies. But then I don't know. It just feels different. It feels fresh in this movie. Like the colors are so beautiful in this movie. The family dynamic is so good. It's so good. It worked for me so much. And when you're first introduced to like George Lopez's character, Uncle Rudy, I was a little nervous because it was like, oh, are they really going to like play him? Like, but it works so well in the relationship that he has with Rudy, that Jaime Reyes has with Rudy is so good. Like, oh man, it worked for me. And yeah, the villain and their, you know, reasonings for being villains and wanting to take over the world. Yeah, sure. It's fine. It's like a late 90s corporate greed, you know, kind of pointing out a little bit, but it worked. It was fine. As far as the rest of the movie and just Zolo Maraduena, excuse me. He kills it as Jaime Reyes. Kills it. Absolutely, like, perfect. His family casting, perfect. The relationship between he and his uncle, the relationship between he and his dad, it all works. And I don't want to give away too much, but man, I really, really enjoyed this movie. And I love the like kind of homages and throwbacks to like the other Blue Beetles. Like they don't just discount that like there's one Blue Beetle. It's like, no, there's been a few. And the guy who like was not able to crack the scarab is, you know, kind of this like tongue in cheek, you know, type of like Blue Beetle, but it all works for me. So yeah, I enjoyed it. And I hate that this movie is not doing as well as it's doing. I really, really hope that word of mouth is going to spread because there is a lot of really like positive word of mouth about this movie. But also I'd very much like to see Jaime Reyes in this new universe. I think the character Blue Beetle is such a fascinating character. And like what he can do, like imagine this guy next to Batman and Superman, like how much fun that whole like dynamic could be. So the movie worked. I of the movies that like I've had to watch for this podcast over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 months that we've been doing this, like this is my favorite one that we've watched or that I've had to watch so far. Oh man, I really dug this movie. So now we'll go to you, JTE. Just bring down this positive vibe that we all got going for us.
Let me start off by saying this. Today's internet, social media, everyone wants to put you into two groups. You hated it or you loved it.
Yes.
And a real critic is able to live in that gray area and tell you why some things worked, some things didn't. I tweeted out that it was a disappointment for me because I went in wanting to love the movie, and I left just thinking it was okay. I don't think this is a horrible film. There's a lot of things in here. I even said this in my tweet where the movie like really got me, and I was like, oh, I'm really digging this. But there was a lot of stuff I also didn't really enjoy. I thought the first hour was very slow. I thought at times the comedy and the way the characters were treated almost felt like I was watching a sitcom and not – I didn't attach – I will say this. I didn't attach myself to the family as much as I was hoping, but as the film – went on, especially in the second half, it improved. I will say the second half of this movie I thought was much better than the first half. And this is a film that was supposed to be streaming, and halfway through production they said, here's a couple of $50 million, go theatrical. And I will say the first 45 minutes to an hour I felt like I was kind of watching a movie that wasn't at the level of what you would get in a regular DCEU film, like say The Flash, which I, you know, most of us here really enjoyed. I felt like I was watching a kind of a second tier. Now he's a second tier character,
yeah.
But I still felt like at times I was watching a second tier DCEU film, but that does improve in the second half because the second half is action packed. And some of the family relationships, things that weren't working for me in the first half did start working for me more in the second half. So for me overall, it's a mixed bag, but I think the negative just outweighs the positive by a hair, a little bit. I could change my mind on a second viewing. I will definitely watch this once it's streaming at home because there are aspects of this I really enjoyed. And I'm curious to see if I could enjoy maybe the movie more. Now I know what the tonal shifts are going to be like, because I do think there are moments in this movie where I felt one way and then I was like, wow, the tonal shift changed drastically here. I was laughing at like a fart joke 2 minutes ago, and now somebody is like hanging on for dear life. So at times that tonal shift didn't work for me. It reminded me a little bit, and it's not this bad, but Thor, Love and Thunder at time had the same issue where anytime something dramatic or like serious happened, it was undercut by like a really bad joke or a really childish kind of dumb joke. And at times in this movie, I did feel that way. So overall, a mixed bag, leaning a little bit more towards negative, but I am open to rewatches. Maybe I don't think I'll go see it in the theater again, but I will definitely watch it when it hits streaming. And I'm hoping maybe some of these issues I had, which I will get into much more in the spoilers because I can't really talk about them here. But yeah, so again, I didn't hate this movie. I didn't love this movie. I just thought it was okay. And I wanted to leave this movie like I left Black Panther or Shang-Chi. Those are two movies where underrepresented, you know, races are given their film, and I felt were just home runs. I left Shang-Chi and Black Panther, and I was like, home run. This one, maybe first base. Maybe they could have stole second, but it just was a home run for me. That's all.
Who hurt you, JT? Jesus.
I'll tell you in the spoiler. Yeah.
He'll tell you in his war flashback.
And we are now joined by Jesse Swift, ladies and gentlemen. He had some technical difficulty at first, but Jesse, we're at the point now where we are discussing our thoughts, non-spoiler thoughts, on Blue Beetle. Take it away, sir.
Fantastic. I'm glad I'm not too late to contribute something. Thank you, first of all, for having me. I got the tail end of JTE's thoughts and a little bit of Twitter thoughts. So it's interesting to get a lot of different takes on it. It's nothing that blew me away, absolutely. And I like that JTE had the optimism of, like, I want this to be the next Black Panther or Shang-Chi. And for me, I feel like the character of Jaime Reyes could be and can be, and I felt very strongly about how he was represented and brought to life on screen. I don't think the movie around him was as strong as Black Panther or Shang-Chi, which means like it could be a really great starting point if it wasn't the seventh DC bomb in a row. That's hard to say, you know, what's going to happen from there. But as far as the movie itself, I'm a little more positive than JT, but not like overwhelmingly so. I did think it was better than okay. I thought it was good, not great. But good is better than Black Adam, Shazam, like the last however many DC projects that have been coming out other than like the Batman, right? And I think the humor worked well. I think the really serious moments also worked really well. I do empathize a little bit with the jarring shift between them. Like, I feel like comedy is working well here and drama is working well here. The transition was a little bit of whiplash, but they were like two separate entities, both kind of working well. Whereas I think there's a reference to Love and Thunder. I feel like neither was really working and they were just kind of clashing with each other. I think it's an awesome introduction to Jaime Reyes. I'm a big fan of the character. I've loved him in Young Justice and Injustice and everything that has the word justice and Blue Beetle in it, other than Smallville, because, you know, Smallville's its own thing. But the family dynamic, you know, not to beat a dead horse, everyone's talked about it. It's really good. It's great. George Lopez, I thought he was going to be wildly distracting going into the movie, but I thought he was kind of one of the beating hearts of the film. And I love that we did not ignore, without getting into spoilers, there is a legacy with the Blue Beetle character. Jaime Reyes is not the first. Anyone that knows anything about Blue Beetle knows that without any details going out. And I'm glad that that wasn't ignored and they didn't pretend like it was any other way than it is. So I had a really good time, and that's saying something. I think that could have been a good start, but unfortunately DC's brand has been really, really tainted. And we can see that in the box office and who's going to see it. And I wish more people would see this because the critics overall more seem to like it than not. And I think the audience is liking it too. I think that Jaime Reyes deserves more, and I'd like to see more from him. Maybe not the strongest start, but not a bad foot to get going on.
Well said. Okay. Well, now we can talk spoilers. Let's go there. JT, who hurt you?
Yeah.
What happened? You played on us.
I'm glad Roke is here.
Okay. Yes.
I definitely want to talk to this. So, the first half of this movie, when we're introduced to the family, I thought some of the humor, and I feel bad even saying this, but at times I felt like it was a little insulting and a little bit stereotypical. I felt like, in a way, I was watching like a bad Fox sitcom from the 90s, and it's like, hey, it's
George Lopez show.
He's like, where's my truck? He's like, my truck's name is Taco. And some of these comments, I was like, this feels a little bit cheap to me. And it feels like I don't want to say they shouldn't lean into, you know, their Mexican heritage and all that, but they were playing on some stereotypes at times where I was like, come on, like, this is not a sitcom family who's playing to these stereotypes. And that's how I felt in the beginning, mostly, because I do think that family aspect, especially because we're talking spoilers, once the father passes away and they come together and the way they deal with that, I thought was beautiful. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, this is working. But everything before that, times I was just like, this feels almost in some ways insulting to me. Like, I'm half Hispanic. My dad's from South America. I'm not Mexican. So I can't say as a Mexican, I was offended by some of the things. But as somebody watching the movie, I was like, I could see somebody maybe taking some of these jokes and some of these stereotypes and having some issues with it. I don't know if I'm out of line for saying that, but I just have to be true to what I was feeling while I was watching the movie. Now, I know this is directed by a Mexican director. The cast is amazing. I just wonder if some of the material could have been a little bit more grounded and not so comical. And because there are jokes in here that absolutely spoke to me because of some of my Spanish heritage. The bubblegum cabalu, I ate that stuff as a child in South America. Like, it was crazy. Nobody in America even knows that gum.
I
grew up eating that stuff like crazy in South America. So there's some little jokes in here and little ties in that I absolutely loved. But I did have to wrestle with the fact there were times where I felt the movie was playing in a stereotype a little too much, and I could see some people being a little offended. Do you feel that way at all, Roka? That's one thing I definitely want to ask.
No, I didn't, because they turned the stereotypes on the head. And you got to understand it. And listen, I don't know that this was
Angel Manuel Soto's point of view or what he was doing mm-hmm. here with this, because he didn't write the script. Obviously, someone else wrote the script. Garth mm-hmm. Alcazar Duran, I think his name is. So, but I think the point was, how do we make this palatable to the whites? And then we'll start to add more dimension to the characters. But mm-hmm. I think right off the bat, the family is waiting for Jaime. Jaime's graduating. That's a big deal in the Latin community. I'm a firstborn son. I was the firstborn son to go to college. Like, mm-hmm. it was a big deal in my family. So immediately I connected to that as a universal thing in the Latino community for immigrant families, right? It's most of the times they're not coming here with a college education. They want yeah. their kids to get a college education. So already it was great here. The dad and was you know taking the pictures, the embarrassing stuff. All mm-hmm. of that felt right. But yeah, George Lopez, initially the character is played for a Mexican stereotype guy, you know, afraid of the government and all this shit. But then when you find out that he's actually this tech wizard and he's the black sheep of the family, every Latin family, probably every family, a universal thing, has that one black sheep. And so Rudy kind of symbolized that. So I like that they turned that on its head when you initially thought he was a stereotype. He's actually got more going on for him. I can actually see your point of view totally, JT. I get where you might go in that direction with it, especially if you take pride in the Latin community. You don't want to just default to these stereotypes.
Yeah.
But we saw a very strong father, a very strong mother, the grandmom, very much a big part of their world. And also the sister, the ball-busting sister. Yeah. And this mm-hmm. is where I think they broke the stereotype. In most Latin families, the son is the favored child over the daughter. We know that. That's the just standard thing. So the fact that they made her her own person who did not want to do what Jaime did, like go to college and whatever, which they have that conversation on the roof. I think that yep. broke the stereotype. The fact that her family loved her and loved him equally, I think was a really important way of breaking the stereotype, or breaking that machismo thing that's mm-hmm. in the Latin family sometimes. So for me, I can see why you felt that way. But for me, I was connecting to all of this because I come from, my dad is an immigrant. My mom was an immigrant, you know, so there's a lot here that for me worked. Although it was through a Mexican lens, there were some universal things. I mean, that Vicks Vapor Rub moment, give me a break. My grandmother and my mom has put that on me for like everything. You know, Chris Rock talks about yeah. the purple drink for the broken leg. It's the same thing yeah. in our Latin community. Vicks Vapor mm-hmm. Rub solves everything. So I just, those little incisive portrayals of the Latin culture for me gave it an authenticity that I have not seen in a bit, and I've only seen in the best of the Latino movies like La Bamba and these other ones that really make you feel that culture deeply. So,
I got to speak to Vicks really quick because I was pretty sure when COVID like started, before anyone knew that it was COVID, I think I got it right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that made me feel better at all was a little vapor rub right here.
Yeah, that's the only thing. It's a gift.
But to work it, so like, this was something I was wrestling with. It wasn't like I left the theater like, this is an insult to everybody. It was like,
right.
I feel these feelings, but so what you were saying is like the large strokes of the family working dynamic, that worked for me. And it worked for me in Miller film. It was just the jokes in between, the small moments where some comments, like, again, I mentioned, he named his truck taco. I'm like, really? That's the best thing you could come up with? I'm going to call my truck taco? Like, there were little things like that that bothered me. But I do agree with you. They do flip, you know, some of these characters. And I love how they come together later.
I mean, now, Anana being a revolutionary, for fuck's sake, that,
yeah, that was great. Yeah. That was when they're looking at the map and she's like, I thought she was getting a suit.
For sure.
But Jesse was talking about the tonal shifts.
Yeah.
Some of that tonal shifts, especially in the third act, really bothered me because I think it's hilarious seeing grandma with a minigun shooting all these guys and like laughing.
Yeah. And then she says, now we can cry.
Yeah. And now we can cry. Like, that's later. Scene. But I don't know. It just,
that worked for me too.
That worked for me too. Cause I like it. The family's like, we're going to deal with it later. Now we need to go save. Yeah.
I just meant the shift.
Oh, the shift. Yeah. So, but like the movie up to that point, up until the father dies, it is basically a comedy. Mm. And I know the father is, you know, dies of a heart attack, and I set it up earlier.
Yeah.
But I was like, it felt like such a tonal shift. And I was like, wait, we're killing parents now like this? Like, this movie was just such a comedic kind of fun time. Mm. And when Sam Raimi did it and say Spider-Man, Uncle Ben, maybe because we know the story of Spider-Man, maybe it just, you know, I was expecting it. But when it happened here, it felt like, wait, this did not feel like the type of movie that would kill somebody like this seriously. Oh. And the scene is playing for drama. The scene is not played.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, yeah, it's played to be a very dramatic, heartbreaking scene.
Yeah.
And that tonal shift was like, ooh, I felt it just being like, wait a minute, what? I just got off the roller coaster and now there's a hurricane going through the amusement park. What's happening right now? So some of those tonal shifts didn't work for me. And in the third act, at times I was like, is this movie trying to be like serious? Or is it trying to be about a movie where a giant bug climbs up a wall of a castle? Like, I just didn't know. Like, the tonal shifts were just really hard for me. And I like the bug scene. I like the scene where the bug's going up. I was like, yeah, this is fun. But then, like, two scenes later, or like, you know, 15 minutes later, I'm seeing a child who was taken through, like, you know, child slavery turned to kill. And I'm just like, oh my God. That sequence alone, when you see the backstory of the main villain,
yeah, Carapex, yeah,
is so good.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But
and that's a real thing.
That's a real thing. Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Beast of No Nation.
One of the Americas,
touch on that. But to see that in this movie felt off. Like, I felt like the rest of the movie is not trying to get that deep. And so when it goes that deep in that moment and it's so good, it feels out of place with everything. Like, 2 minutes later, I saw Grandma shooting a futuristic weapon at a bunch of bad guys that basically played for jokes. And yeah, a couple, and then 10 minutes later, I'm seeing this really deep, heartbreaking kid who was taken from his mother. It just felt really up and down for me. So that's when I talk about tonal shifts, that's kind of the things I'm really talking about.
And you got that didn't affect any of you guys. Helicopters with bubble gum.
Yeah. Yeah. And then someone falls out of a helicopter with bubble gum. So for you guys that liked it, like Moose and Benny and Roka, did any of these shifts, like, did that bother you at all, or is it just me and Jesse?
No, that's what I mean when I said there were points where I would roll my eyes. Like, there were definitely times where, like, a scene would seem out of place. And I would say the biggest culprit of that is, like, so George Lopez, we found out he's a tech genius, and he's sort of the guy in the chair for the Blue Beetle,
for lack
of a better term. Yeah. But then, like, once they get on the bug, there's never any foreshadowing before that. But then, like, all the family is combat trained and ready to go. And so, like, at that point, you know, I roll my eyes. But, like, it's one of those things, like, you know, it's a fun movie in general. So you either are going to decide, like, okay, I'm just going to let it do what it's going to do, and I'm going to have fun with it. Because if I think about it too hard, it's going to drive me nuts.
Yeah. And I think sometimes that's a balancing act, because we have movies that, like, try to be fun, but they're not, like, good enough at doing that to sidetrack you from the things that aren't as strong. I felt like Blue Beetle was strong in the fun department, and you're like, yeah, you know, I'm going to notice these things. I'm going to take note. That didn't really work. That was a little jarring, but how did I feel coming out of the movie? And I think a lot of times, for those of us that aren't, you know, paid critics and don't have to, you know, write paragraphs and paragraphs, it's just we go off of feelings when we have, like, a Twitter review or something like that. And I came out of Blue Beetle like, yeah, that was fun. I want to see more from this character. And yeah, it wasn't perfect.
I would say the biggest, if I was looking for something that I just did not work for me, there were two things in the movie that I just did not like. One is I like the colors in the movie, but I did not like the designs that they used for the scarab itself once the suit was on.
Oh, really?
They lifted very liberally from some of the Spider-Man suits, and it made it look kind of like a knockoff. So I was not a fan of the design either of Carapax's suit or of the Blue Beetle suit, just because I felt that they weren't doing anything interesting with the suits. And there were points that you could tell that it was originally made from streaming and that it just didn't live up to what the rest of the movie was doing. And just me personally, I didn't feel like a lot of chemistry between Jaime and the cord girl. It just seemed like they were happened to be there together.
Two pretty people.
Yeah. And so it was okay. I just didn't feel like a lot of chemistry.
That's ironic because they're actually dating in real life, but yeah.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have no idea.
Good for you, Zorro.
For Instagram.
Good for them, but on screen, like, I didn't buy it.
Yeah, that's a fair criticism, I think.
I think the tonal shifts kind of go, like, it's kind of the ride of this movie, though.
Like this movie does have that like very serious moment, funny moment, very serious moment, funny moment. Like it's just kind of that movie. Then there's almost like horror aspects to the movies. Like,
oh, his first transformation.
Yeah. Oh, let's talk about that shit. His first transformation was horrifying. Horrifying.
That was some Cronenberg stuff.
I will say though, like I loved the nowadays in Marvel, they just like tap their chest and all of a sudden, boom, they have this like super suit that they wear, right? I actually like that the suit ripped off his clothing every single time that it was coming out of him.
Kind of like
Hulk. Yes. Yes. And so like, I like that they stuck with that gag and it wasn't just like, oh, you know, the suit learned how to adapt to his clothes. Like, no, like it takes a physical toll for him to become the Blue Beetle. Yeah. I don't know. I'm a little opposite, Benny. I actually dug the look of the suit. And the just how like tactical and like multi-purpose the suit could come, like do anything, but the way that like the Beetle would actually have wings at points when he was flying, or the wings would come out like as a defensive measure. So I dug the suit. I agree. I did not the OMAC and Kira Pax's initial look that didn't really work to me. I thought it would look a little more tactical.
It's very Ant-Man, but like less well done.
Yes. Instead, it was more like fantastical. Like, wait, you have this technology already without the Blue Beetle. Yeah. Like, you're capable of this, and you're not already running the world. Like, come on, Susan Sarandon, what the hell?
One thing I'll say about the suit, real quick, is I agree. Like, when it first took into his body, and like David Cronenberg, it was almost like this body horror. But then family never really reacted like in a serious manner. It was almost played for jokes with the whole family. They were making jokes as he was leaving. They made jokes when he came back. Yeah. They made jokes when he was naked. And it kind of undercut that horror and seriousness of what was happening to him.
If I saw that happen to one of my friends or family members, I feel like I'd start crying from the horror of it.
But and the family kind of takes it like, oh, you're a superhero now. That was crazy. It's like... The family should be horrified.
Can I counter this?
Yeah, please.
I feel like you're coming from an American perspective, right? And I'm going to put that out there and say that.
Okay.
And maybe that's right or wrong. That's just my as a counter. Latinos who crossed the border have seen some shit, man.
That's okay.
From some horrible shit. I mean, like she became essentially a Sandinista at the end of the movie.
Yeah. The grandmother, I understand.
That's what I'm saying. But her as well as the daughter, I mean, like, and who knows what the father said. To me, we see some shit coming through the world and coming out of these terrible war-torn nations. I mean, my parents are came from Bolivia. Mm-hmm. 176 revolutions in the history of that country. Mm-hmm. That tells you, like, shit's always changing. It's always crazy. And they do the most... I mean, go and read, JT, the Pinochet regime, go and read what the horrible things they did to people, that the men who they got in. So, like, to me, when they were reacting to it, in my mind, I was like, wait, why aren't they doing more? And then I'm like, oh, man, they've probably seen some shit. And so
it's also that
way, you know?
With this, they've established that this is an existing DC universe, too. So you have Superman and Batman and all kinds of like aliens and stuff like that.
We saw LexCorp. So like, good point. But Jaime reacted like an American.
Yes.
Out of pure fucking horror. Yeah. This is happening to him. But everyone else, and his sister, too. I think him and his sister were the ones who were freaking out the most.
Well, the fun joke, too, is when he was like, it's inside of me. And he's like, it's okay to let everyone know it went up your ass. it was so good.
And I see what you're saying, Roka, but I need the movie to give me like you could bring that to the movie, and I totally understand that take.
That's fair too.
The movie needs to give you something.
That's fair.
Give me an opening scene with the grandmother, like in a revolution. Give me a scene where the mother is talking about, like when they're talking to him about going back to school. Give me a speech of what they went through to get him here. Like, you can't quit college. This is what we did. The movie has to give me something.
Yeah, maybe the daughter saying something and the parents going, we've seen some shit. This is not too bad. Yeah,
100%. When your son goes to the ceiling.
Yeah, I don't need Nana's backstory.
That's a
solid move. I love the mystery of Nana.
Yeah.
Like, I love that.
Well, if you're playing it for a joke, then yes, I understand.
The scene when
but if you're not playing it for a joke,
puts her arm and pushes him behind.
Oh, that was so
and
funny!
And then just mows down these guys. Yeah. Oh man, it was.
So I was wheezing when she grabbed him by the hip and just kind of like slid him back there.
Yeah, I got this. It's okay, sweetie. I will stand behind Nana.
If I could jump in,
yep, get up.
Now, I said one thing I'll agree with JTE is about Carapax's like backstory. Mm. I mean, that was like a very like jarring, like impactful scene.
Yeah.
But through most of the movie, he was kind of just like this automaton, faceless villain. Where I think if they had moved that to the earlier part of the movie, and you understood like why he is trying to get powerful, why he is on this mission, why he is so jaded, I think you would have had a more powerful villain throughout. But once they did go through that scene, like whether it was jarring or not, like when, you know, he walks into the fire with Susan Sarandon, and I had the feels there for a little bit, you know, because of that scene where I think it, the only thing that I would say is if that was at the beginning, so you, like you knew like, oh, this is why this is happening. So I think to your point, that's right. I think that scene is just in the wrong spot.
You would have conflict, like internal conflict about like, hey, Jaime, maybe you should like, you know, reel it in or try to understand him, because you'd see both of them.
Yeah, no, I don't think that would confuse the viewer for a first time out. I think if you'd done that maybe in a second, like what they do with the Joker, right? I mean, when you watch Joker and Dark Knight, like because you've established Batman, the Ra's al Ghul thing.
Mm-hmm.
So now you know who Batman is. And then when you bring Joker in and have him like doing these commentaries as my father did this, my you know, I did the, you know, you start to sense there's something more here, and you start to wonder what side you're on. And I think when you're watching an origin story, you don't want to confuse the audience with a villain that's too sympathetic.
And I
think Angelman Soto wanted that to be a commentary on how so many people judge Latino criminals or the people who've Latinos who've experienced stuff and their anger and their frustration when they don't know the backstory of the shit they've been through. Mm. So when they showed that backstory, I got real emotional when he took him, when he took Susan Sarandon into the fire. I started to cry because I'm like, fuck, man, that's something that we all know. Like when you have conversations with your relatives or the people in your family who are Latino, like you just have heard stories of the things they've experienced. And so to me, that got me. And again, I'm just coming from my own perspective, so I can only speak from my own perspective. I thought that really worked overall. But I will say that I think they muted Carapax throughout the movie. I think they made a mistake in having two strong villains in Susan Sarandon and Carapax, and he was always attached to her, almost always, instead of like establishing them as their own things separately. You were kind of split on who to follow here.
And it kind of feels like Bane in Dark Knight Rises.
Like Susan Sarandon's awful in this. Can we all agree on Susan Sarandon? She showed up, got her check, and said, I'm going to my trailer.
She did what she could with that role.
She's like a good actress.
I mean, there was an opportunity, like they mentioned, like she was passed up to run the company in favor of her brother because her grandfather didn't favor her as a female. And so there was like, oh, okay, that's her motivation. But then it was like, oh, nope, we just dropped that storyline. And
she's just
a bitch.
That was like, a weird thing to humanize her with that, because it's like plenty of women have actually legitimately experienced that. To have that as a way of humanizing her, then throwing it away, I thought was a weird decision. So,
yes.
I was really hoping she did what she
could with the role.
Yeah.
I really wanted Harvey to make it out of this movie from What We Do in the Shadows. Like, I love him. I love that he shows up in literally everything right now.
Yeah.
That was another like tonal shift and something that was like seemed like lighthearted for a second. They just like died horribly on the other side of the door. I was like, oh, yikes. Okay.
So I thought the same exact thing. I was like, oh, good for you, kid. Oh, like, damn. He's like brutally murdered.
He's like, go ahead, Benny. I'll let you go.
I'll say, I love the fact that he got off so violently, because if you don't, that becomes like such a generic scene where if he stands, you know, he finally, the beat down assistant stands up and does the right thing and he rides off in the sunset. That happens in like every third superhero movie. But when he stands up and he gets his head smashed, you don't see that. So I think that was an interesting way to go with it.
He's like okay with killing him throughout this whole movie.
He was confident from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, he was at the last minute. He's there, like, tear his suit off, kill him. He's like, yes, ma'am. But then she says his last name wrong one more time.
Which I love get that. It's not Sanchez.
I know, but for that to turn him, that's what turned him.
Wait,
killing this kid?
No.
He was constantly protesting what she was doing. Confident.
I know, but he did everything
the whole time.
Well, you know,
he was already thinking about it, and he was saying, "I'm sorry," and he didn't want to do it.
Yeah,
and. Yeah, she called him Sanchez, but he was already like thinking about how to help him, and she walked in on him like trying to find a way to like help him out of it.
Let me talk about a scene I loved, because I don't want to come off like I'm all negative about this movie. So the scene where he is literally tied up to the machine, they're trying to transfer all his data and they're going to kill him in the process. And we get the scene with his father, and like, which is like this astral plane, which again, it did remind me of Black Panther.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, we're doing this trick again. But I think both those actors give great performance in that scene.
Yeah.
The way the visuals are given are amazing. The music is like the buildup in that scene to when he finally jumps off and goes to the suit, when he finally gets back in the suit. That like 5 minutes is where I was like locked in. I'm like, this movie is working on every level for me. And then I feel like they fumbled the ball just a little bit though, because when he gets back, his suit's like rebooting. I was like, there was this huge crescendo buildup. I was ready for that machine to get turned off. He's like, I am one with the robot. And then it's like, rebooting, you must wait 5 minutes.
But then,
I'm like,
okay. Yeah, I'm ready. But then once it does reboot, you get the coolest scene where he and the suit are like finally in sync with each other.
That's good.
I feel like this movie shines in its action.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that sets it apart from being as generic as certain elements of the movie could be portrayed as, because it's like, I've seen this plot 100 times. I've seen this line of dialogue 100 times. And the action, what they decide to do to set Blue Beetle apart from, he's not just Iron Man, you know, he's a unique character. I thought that was actually really well handled throughout the movie. And I want to touch on, because JT was just talking about that scene, that realization that the father has in like the afterlife is, he's like, this is my purpose. This is what I was meant to do, is to be here for you in this moment. Dude, I was bawling.
Oh yeah.
I was like, what are you doing to me, Blue Beetle? And it really just kind of bounced back and forth between feeling very like cinematic quality and streaming movie quality. Like, it was a little mixed bag of both, but I'm glad it got to be in the theaters, because I do think ultimately when you look at the whole package, it deserved to be.
Hmm. I think the scene, it's so beautiful when he first sees his father in this astral plane. And you see just like the candles first in the living room, and then it just kind of expands back, and you just see like hillsides of candles. Just beautiful. It was like one of like the most beautiful scenes I think I've seen in like movies, especially depicting like the afterlife. Oh, so like that whole segment, I agree, JT, that 5 minute segment is beautiful. The CGI is not great, but you know what? It didn't need to be great. Like, the emotional impact that that Jaime and his father had together was incredible. Yeah. And then, yes, of course, you get the touching of the tips when he reaches out to the
suit. That's what I was trying to, like,
Jesse.
I was thinking Guardians of the Galaxy, and then this.
Remember, this is a podcast, but for those of you wondering what we're talking about, Jesse was reenacting them touching fingers with each other.
Oh, yes. Yes. It was the fingers.
Fingers.
Yes. Yeah. I think the candles, I think, are supposed to symbolize Dia de los Muertos when you have the candles out for the lost.
I got Coco vibe, so that's kind
of I thought was a really nice touch. I mean, again, this is why you have, and why it's important to have a Latin director for a story like this, because a Latin director will understand the little nuances and bring that out in certain scenes like this. And, you know, religion, the afterlife, ghosts, spirits, it's a big thing in the Latin community. And so the fact that they use that in this scene, I thought, was really surprising, but yet the right decision. And yeah, I agree with JT. It was such a beautifully acted scene. And I think that shows the confidence of Ángel Manuel Soto as well as a director, because he's like, yeah, I'm going to do a scene in the middle of this movie, or at the near the, you know, right in the back half of the movie, where we go to the astral plane, man. We've been grounded in this Palmetto City, doing the things that we're doing, and I'm going to take this motherfucker out into the goddamn universe, and let's see what happens. And that could have easily been the most cheesiest scene or the worst scene, but there was an authenticity in the performance. That's again, right. This is why you cast acting royalty like they cast, Spanish acting royalty like they cast, or Latino acting royalty, rather, that they cast in the movie, so that they can deliver with the limited amount of screen time that they have. And certainly because of his death, he was not in a majority of the back half of the movie, but that scene was so good, you know. So
I really quick just want to say I think it's a damn shame that Warner Brothers and James Gunn respectively chose to really like push the Flash. Blue Beetle was coming out. They're like, yeah, we're also doing this movie. I'm like, your priorities are very mixed. Yeah. Like, it should have been, you know, lead with this. This is your like not problematic, great movie that could actually mean something to a lot of people. Yeah. And the other one is, you know, led by a criminal. Like, you just, you know.
I mean, you understand the decision because of Keaton and Affleck and Gal Gadot and everything Supergirl. Like that.
From what I've seen, Supergirl, this is the superior film.
Yeah. Right, exactly. You're 100% right. Yes. And that is a question to be asked of the executives of Zaslav, who made that decision in the end, and why they decided to hardly promote Blue Beetle, but promote the F out of The Flash. And Shazam, too, by the way. So. Yeah.
Yeah, did everybody prefer this over Flash?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've only seen Flash in TikTok and YouTube shorts. Okay. So from what I've seen, yeah, because I'm not going to see it.
What about you, Benny? It's close for me. I'm not like I liked Flash a lot, to be honest with you.
I think quality wise, as far as my enjoyment of the movies, I would say it's pretty similar. Like I enjoyed both movies. I was happier when I left this one just because, you know, there wasn't any negative baggage. This one was just happy.
Yeah.
So even though I think quality wise, they're, you know, probably on a similar plane, I definitely left this movie a lot happier than when I left The Flash.
And I just want to speak for go ahead.
No, Flash is a very comedic film, more than I thought it was going to be because of Barry Allen. Yeah. But the Barry Allen stuff with his mother, like, really worked for me. Just like the stuff with this movie, the father stuff really worked for me. So to me, it's very close. I don't think it's one or the other. It's hard for me to say, but it's close. It's not as easy to put this one over the other one as it is for, I guess, you guys.
Yeah. From an unbiased standpoint, I just want to say, like, I see Zolo as Blue Beetle. And I think he like nails Jaime Reyes like throughout the entire movie. And Ezra, since the conception of his of their casting as Barry, never worked for me. And I never saw them as Barry Allen. So I'm still waiting for a Flash movie from my mind. Like, I'm still waiting for Barry Allen to be nailed. Whereas I'm like, they got Jaime. Jaime's right. Everything about Jaime is correct. And moving forward, like, that can be our character. But I was ready for a recast after BVS already.
Gotcha. So you were out before it even happened. Yeah. So Roka, are these movies are they close for you, or is it really?
That's a good question, man. Because I think The Flash is a better directed film, because I think what you brought up earlier is correct. Like, halfway through, WB is like, you know what? Let's make this a theatrical release.
Yeah.
So we'll give you more money, and so the quality changes in terms of how they're approaching it, and the budget and the CGI and this. I mean, the special effects here I thought were great. I mean, the bug climbing up the wall, that stuff.
That was great.
When they go down in the Ted Kord's place, that's where you saw the limited budget that they had. Let's go with old tech so that we can cover it, and let's have the old suit, the Ted Kord suit hanging there, which I thought
I love that so much. Yeah,
it was so awesome to see that. Yeah. I thought there was going to be like a Booster Gold kind of obvious hint, but I didn't see anything there. So I was like, all right, fine. But I think The Flash is a better directed film. I didn't mind the CGI like other people do when he goes into the Speed Force or whatever and the thing spinning around. I thought that was a choice by yet another Latino director in Muschietti. So I think The Flash is a better film, but I have to say that I walked out of Blue Beetle with a bigger smile than I walked out of The Flash. So that's what I would say.
Totally understand.
And splitting the difference, so to speak, between the two films.
There's some similar themes.
And they're both way fucking better than Shazam 2, I'll just say that.
No doubt. No argument there.
I think Muschietti had the harder task of directing that 100%. Movie. 100%. You know, than this one. And this one, I mean, listen, you're directing a movie for streaming services, and then all of a sudden they're like, you know what, here's an additional $50 million more. If you're a director, you're like, holy shit, like, you're
like, it's money we saved on Batgirl, here you go.
Too soon. I kind of want to see that movie now.
I do too.
Honestly, these are the people making the decisions on what films to release and not release, and what films to get behind and not get behind. There's no fucking way that I should trust their judgment about Batgirl. That should be released so people can make a decision.
They'll
probably never do it, because if people like it, they would look even more stupid.
You know? Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I would like to see at least one movie with Michael Keaton that I'm like was looking forward to.
I think in 5 years we get the David Ayer's cut of Suicide and Batgirl as just drops on HBO Max for extra publicity.
Maybe if they can find a way to figure out the financial thing with that, because of course they took a loss on it. Would they be allowed to show it legally? That would be something to unwind for sure. But the way David Ayer
did a tax write-off, right?
Yeah, so, well, that's what I'm saying. So you can't really show it if you used it to write off the taxes, I think, is what it is now with the legal situation. Mm. But yeah, with the other one, the more David Ayer gets on Twitter, the more I think it's going to happen, because he was going at people over the last few days about the David Ayer cut. So
I think everyone here can agree that the family aspect of this movie worked. That was probably the best part for me, was the family aspect.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some stuff that didn't work well for us. We've kind of been tiptoeing a little bit about it. And obviously there's a lot of tonal shifts, and sometimes it's very quick tonal shifts. And yeah, that, I think we all felt it, but this movie is just kind of a ride. You kind of have to just roll with these shifts. But Benny, what didn't work for you, pal? Let's kick it off with you.
So I would say one, like I already mentioned it. I don't care if they're dating in real life, man. I didn't think that. I worry about their relationship if they're dating in real life. There was no chemistry. But beyond that, I think one thing that they did stick with slightly too long is that when the suit would overtake him, he didn't have any say. The suit was being the hero, and he just happened to be a dude standing there. Now, eventually, they did sink and become one, but I kind of think they carried on with that a little too long, because for the first part of the movie, like, I kind of felt that he was just there, and the suit is the hero. So I wish they had at least had a partial bonding earlier than what they did. I don't know if that makes any sense. I didn't like that he was a innocent bystander to his own heroism for so long in the movie.
It's upgrade.
Yeah. But those were kind of my only criticism. Like I said, you know, there are tonal shifts and there are things that are just silly, but I took those with a grain of salt and I had fun with them.
I think I say this all the time. I like explanation to things. I just, there was zero explanation to the scarab aside from, oh, so it's alien? Oh, okay. It just arrived here. Like, that's like, I want a little bit of context to the scarab. And I don't know if anyone saw it in the beginning, but the scarab actually collides with another scarab in the like opening sequence. Like, there's like multiple scarab beetles actually like flying out. It just follows the blue one because that's obviously the one that lands on Earth. To your point, Benny, like I've read some of the Blue Beetle comics, and there's always a bit of a struggle between the suit and Jaime. And sometimes the suit just completely takes over and he's arguing with the suit while the suit is kind of doing. So that actually worked for me because I knew that kind of relationship between the suit and Jaime. But yeah, I just want a little bit more like, give me just a tiny bit more explanation of the scarab besides like it landed here and it's alien. Okay. I'll go off of that. I trust you so far, but that's probably like my biggest criticism. And that's just, again, that's just because I like to know, I like origins of things. So that didn't work for me. How about you, John?
Yeah. I think there's some validity to some of the criticisms people have had that we've seen a lot of this before, right? Like,
sure.
Becky G is the voice of the scarab there. And, you know, very similar to what we had with Jarvis and then later with Friday, which is Carrie Condon, who was nominated for the Oscar for Banshees of Inisherin. So we've had that before. The suit taking over somebody, we've seen that before. Yeah. The family aspect, the cultural family aspect in Shang-Chi and in Black Panther to a degree, we've seen that before. So there was a lot of things that I get why people felt like we'd seen this before, but for me, it didn't bother me because it had a new take on it. So I want to address that as some of the criticism I've heard. I think for me, the big mistake is the villain. And I think you can't discount how big of a mistake. And I do take your point, Benny. I think you're right. For me, Bruna Marquezine is the weakest actress of the actors in the main cast with the family and her and Jaime. I don't think she's as strong as she needs to be. And the way they give her the role is like this
I'm going to expose you, auntie, evil auntie, you know, and there's not enough there. Although she has a beautiful moment with Jaime when she's talking about her father disappearing. I thought that was a nice scene. I wanted more of that from her. And I think Escobedo, the actress who played the sister, Milagro, she was great. And I think she took a lot of what Bruna Marquezine could have done in the movie as a strong female presence. But yeah, the villain stuff for me is the number one thing that didn't work. Because to me, if you're going to establish a great hero, you got to have a damn good villain,
right?
Especially an origin story. And I know Obadiah Stane doesn't get the respect he deserves, but he's a damn good villain in Iron
Man. I'll give it to
him. Yes, he is.
Right?
Oh, yeah, he is.
I mean, the scene when he debilitates him and whispers into his ear is pure effing evil. When he puts the thing and he says,
just because you created something doesn't mean it belongs to you.
Doesn't mean it belongs to you, Tony. Yeah, it's just like, oh, so good. So you need to have a damn good villain to make the film work. And I think they fumbled the ball there and they should have worked much, much harder to establish that. And I think the mistake was casting Susan Sarandon. I mean, no one's afraid of Susan Sarandon. I know everyone's still in love with Thelma and Louise, but to me, she hasn't been good in a very, very long time and been riding the coattails of stuff she's done in the past.
Wasn't it Sharon Stone first?
Yeah, it was originally, which is a huge mistake because she was the villain in Catwoman. Why the fuck would you put her? You know, like there's a stronger female presence that is a little bit of age that you could have found. There are other actresses.
There's many, many, many. Yes,
that I think would have been a much more powerful villain. And then figuring out the relation with Carapax a little more solidly, I think would have elevated the film even more and made you feel it. So that when you find out the story of Carapax at the end,
they were strongly implying that Ted Kord was not white. So Susan Sarandon, the one white woman, like in that family.
No. Ted's wife is Latina.
Oh, okay.
I think Ted Kord is white and his wife is Brazilian. Yeah.
Okay. I was a little confused. I was like, where's you? Like, it just seemed like she was adopted almost because I felt like everybody in the family was.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Jason Sudeikis at some point supposed to play the Ted Kord character?
Well, that would have been a great choice.
Yeah.
I like Jason for that.
That would have been. There's not a lot of superhero roles I think you could give Jason Sudeikis, but Blue Beetle, I think, would be.
Dude, I would cast Sudeikis as Reed Richards. I'm just saying. Insane.
You and Jeff both.
Are we on JT or me?
It's too old.
Jesse, come on, man. You're the guest. We've heard from JT.
Well, I wanted to take kind of what you said. And it's you're not supposed to judge a movie on what you're supposed to judge it on what it is, not what it wasn't. But there is that information again, because I'm a Blue Beetle fan, largely from Young Justice. There's a whole season of Young Justice that's just about the Reach, which is where the Scarab comes from.
Right.
And it's like the Scarab season. And you get a lot of Blue Beetle, a lot of Jaime Reyes in that. And so I was like, could we at least like reference it? Or like maybe Ted Kord has some notes and he found some things in like alien writing and stuff and like lean into that. And maybe this just means I want a sequel because I feel like everything we got that was good, I needed more of. Yes. Whereas like I needed, you know, more of the family. I needed more Ted Kord stuff. I needed more Beetle Tech type stuff. I needed more of a relationship between the Scarab and Jaime because that, I know they made the family very important and it is important, but for the story of Blue Beetle moving forward, the relationship between Jaime and the Scarab is very important. It's very symbiotic. It's very Venom and Eddie Brock. And you know, where Eddie Brock loses control and Venom takes over. And that does that. They have an ongoing relationship that evolves, but it's always that kind of back and forth of who's in control or Bruce Banner and the Hulk and stuff like that. Jaime's relationship is also like that. You know, when they are threatened, the Scarab chooses what happens most of the time. And there was, even though I enjoyed it, there were some of the highlights. I'm glad that they had an evolution where, you know, the Scarab started speaking Spanish and started saying like, Jaime, we're not killers and stuff. I loved where we got to in the end, but I didn't think the journey between Jaime and the Scarab was strong enough. It was more of a decision that happened after the conversation with his father. Mm. And I was like, that scene's really good. But now, like, you and the Scarab are just tight now. And I wanted more of that journey. I wanted it to be a little more earned. So I guess that would be a negative is even though feeling like I watched a full movie, feeling like relationships or interpersonal things that happened within the movie felt rushed and villain things felt rushed. I feel like a lot of things got shortchanged to have the focus in certain areas, and where the focus was, it was strong with the family, with Jaime. But in a lot of parts, there was things that just didn't come across as strong, like the villain, like some of the complaints that you guys have come up with. So I don't know. Give me a 4-hour of Blue Beetle.
Well, there's a TV series that would have been great, I think. As you said, Jesse, with all the stuff with the Reach and the Scarab and Ted Kord, if you're going to make him a guy who disappeared, then the mystery is Jaime, you know, getting the Scarab inside of him and then what that does to him and then going on this mission because he's connected to Victoria, finding out what happened to Ted. So clearly, I don't know if there's going to be a sequel because the movie underperformed, but it certainly deserves one. And if nothing else, maybe a TV series in some way would be fun to see.
Back to streaming, but like for the right reasons.
Why not?
Well, we're going to go into our final thoughts because we've gone long, but I love going long with this group here. Read into that whatever you want. We'll go down the line. JT, final thoughts on the movie.
Yeah, you know, I agreed with a lot of things you guys said these past like few minutes. I think the world building could have been better. When they get to the Blue Beetle castle, I was like, wait, there's a Blue Beetle in this universe already? I was like, I don't know anything about the comic book character. The only time I've seen Blue Beetle outside of this movie was in like Marvel vs. Capcom. He was a playable character, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the only thing I knew about this character. So when they got to that Batman cave-esque Blue Beetle, I was like, what is this? I want to learn more about this guy. In the movie Ant-Man, they did a really good job of introducing the old Michael Douglas. You know, I would like something like that in this film to give us the history of Blue Beetle and how this new generation Blue Beetle is somehow connected to that besides dating the dude's daughter. So I do feel like, I think Jesse said it pretty well, like, Jesse, in the comics, is his family as an important aspect of the story as it is in this movie? I'm curious about that.
Again, mostly what I know from Blue Beetle is in Justice Game and Justice Comics and the Young Justice show, and the family's not in any of those.
Right.
In that the comics, does not... Yeah, comics, I'm sure.
In the comics, it is.
Yeah. I just wanted to be upfront that I can't speak to the comics because I've read a lot of DC comics, but Blue Beetle's not one of the ones I'm super familiar with. I know his story. I know stuff about the Reach, but that's kind of it.
There's a lot of connective tissues to like the Ms. Marvel comics, and I know that's Marvel, to Blue Beetle. The family is very much involved in both of those stories. So, yeah, with the Jaime. With Ted, it's not really that much, but certainly with Jaime it is.
Okay,
Jaime is like in high school too in the comics.
Yeah.
Like, oh, really?
So his family's very involved because he's a younger guy, kind of given this, you know, abilities.
A little bit more like Miss Marvel, which I really enjoyed Miss Marvel the series. Yeah. So I wish some of the world building of Blue Beetle, the old Blue Beetle, like you guys were talking about, where this thing came from, besides just, you know, shooting out of space, I would like more of that. But I guess because they were concentrating so much on the family aspect, you lost some of that. I guess I just wonder if maybe there was a better balance. But at the same time, the family stuff was the thing that worked the most for me. Right. So I guess he accomplished that. And maybe we'll get some more of those in the sequels. Like, if there's a Blue Beetle 2, I would go see it, of course. Because even though, you know, I didn't love this movie like I wanted to, there were still aspects of that I enjoyed. They were just, you know, to me, overall as a product and a story, it was a mixed bag. So I just left the theater lukewarm. I wasn't riding high. You guys all say you came out with smiles in your face. I came out with a smirk. I was like, that was pretty good. There's a lot of stuff could have been better. So, but it's
When was the last time you smirked at a DC? Well, I guess you like The Flash.
Before that, yeah.
It wasn't Black Adam, right?
No, maybe Birds of Prey. Or Shazam.
Okay.
Batman.
Yeah. Well, Batman's, it's a side.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Oh, JT does not like the Batman.
I was not a big fan of the Batman.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've got plenty to say.
I'm with you, JT. I'm with you.
Thank you, buddy.
Oh, my gosh.
Here we go. Another hour. Here we go.
All right.
Roll right into it.
Put a pot of coffee on. We're going to be here all night. Let's go. Jesse, your final thoughts on Blue Beetle.
I think I kind of said some of them. I really liked it. I'm bouncing back and forth between, like, obviously some of it was predictable and some of it was unoriginal, but then there was those beautiful glowing moments of originality. I have a hard time deciding between like a 7.5 and an 8. And some people might think that that's high or maybe it's low. It depends on how you came out feeling about it. But when I think something is really enjoyable and I would be excited for a sequel, that's got to be more than a 7, right? Because if it was a 6, I'm like, I don't care about this. So I don't know. Can I say like a 7.7? It's almost there.
Sure.
Sure. It's your grading scale that you seem to have internal conflict about. But Mr. Rocha, your final thoughts.
Great conversation. Really appreciated y'all's points of views, you know, taking a look at the film in a different way as well. But in the end, it doesn't sully how much I really, really enjoyed the movie. I loved the like 1980s Miami Vice retro vibe that it had. I liked the bright neon colors with the pink and the blue, and even you know, mixed in with some of the black. All of that worked really well for me. I did enjoy the OMAC story. I felt they could have fleshed that out a little bit more, which we haven't even discussed. The OMAC story, which is a big deal in the DC Comics. Mm-hmm. And I really loved the casting of the family and their chemistry and the way they worked in the movie. I thought the script, for the most part, other than a few cringeworthy lines, I thought worked, which was surprising. And at the end of the day, the bar was pretty high for this one because the knives were already out. People were, you know, ready to throw this one under the bus already. And the fact that Angel directed as good of a film as he did, which really highlighted and celebrated and elevated the Latin culture, not only for the specificity, but also the universal stuff that he was able to connect with on no matter what your culture is. I thought all of that worked really well, and threw in a few surprises that I really enjoyed as a DC fan and also as a Blue Beetle fan, you know, because I became a Blue Beetle fan through Justice League International. That's the first exposure I had in the comics. And from that, I was like, oh, I got to know everything about Blue Beetle. I love this. And so to me, this was a right interpretation of Jaime Reyes that really worked. And Zolo Maradueña, it is a star-making turn for him. Whether the film makes
absolutely
$100 million or not, this kid is here to stay now as an actor. And you all can stop casting Michael Peña and Harvey Guillen and everything and start Zolo Maradueña to put in some stuff, because he is a damn good actor. And he may be, in the end, a guy who does make the jump and may get awards. I'm just putting it out there. You know, if Justin Timberlake can play a serial killer in Reptile, I'll be goddamned that Zolo Maradueña can't be doing those kinds of hard roles down the road. So I am looking forward to that. So for overall, just a really fun time. Had a blast. Yes, some of it was derivative. Yes, the villain stuff wasn't as strong as I would like. But the family stuff is so, so good that it overcomes all of that. And by the end, it left me wanting to see more of Blue Beetle. And I think any film that accomplishes that deserves praise. So I give it 4 out of 5 in my review when I did it. So
it's nice when we could say a DC movie is better than the last 3 or 4 Marvel projects. I said that a long time.
And Benny, wow. Take it away, pal.
So there is a scene in this movie where a character kills a villain with a Nintendo Power Glove.
Yeah.
And, very true.
And if that happens in a movie and you cannot love that movie, that is a you problem. It is not a movie problem. This movie's super fun. Go out and watch it. Support it.
Agreed. You know, much like the Power Glove, I was super excited for the Power Glove. Told all my friends I couldn't wait for it to come out, buy it, put it on. Was not very good. It was very underwhelming. Very much like the Power Glove. It was very underwhelming, much like this movie for me at times. So, great analogy, Betty. Thank you for setting me up. One of the most useless Nintendo products ever, the Power Glove.
I'll keep it brief, but I'll just say this. I want more of Jaime Reyes. I want more of the family. I want more Blue Beetle. If this character is going to continue and be a staple in this new DCU, I'm all for it. I actually thought the world building was done quite well. I mean, the Palmera City was such like a beautiful, like, you know, old Miami vibes. Yeah, it was just, the movie itself was a ton of fun. It is visually very beautiful. Emotionally, it's got the feels. It's got the comedy chops. Like it worked. It worked on a lot of levels for me. And yes, is this the most original comic book, you know, superhero origin? No. Like there, you have all mentioned, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 movies that have done this. But does it work? It absolutely does. So I really do hope that good word of mouth and decent press comes out and this movie gets some better legs underneath it and at least makes its budget back. I mean, this movie cost $100 million, so it doesn't have too much to go to earn it back. I mean, in the grand scheme of things. So please, folks, if you're listening, go see Blue Beetle. Go see it twice. It's a great movie.
Is there anything coming out in the next few weeks to clip its wings? Like, I think everything's pretty much going to be counter-programming, right?
Gran Turismo.
Turismo, which is 3. Getting a lot of good reviews, Grant.
They've been advertising that movie for a year. I have sworn it has come out 4 different times.
And listen, Expendables 3 is right around.
Oh, my God.
Oh, fuck.
It's 4. It's not 4.
Hey. It's 4, yeah.
Oh, 4. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. You and your fucking Expendables.
Andy Garcia, speaking of Latin.
Yeah, it's true. The Equalizer 3 is coming out in September. Oh, that's a good one, yeah. That's going to be a big one.
That's a good one, yeah. I do love me some Equalizer. Well, Jesse, John, we're so grateful to have you guys on our show. Thank you so much for doing this. We'll go around and let you guys plug. Jesse, where can people find you? What you up to?
Well, thank you so much for having me. Sorry that Moose did a great job of reaching out a while ago, and I was like, hey, my work schedule's weird, but if I can get on, I'll get on. And you guys let me on, so thank you for having me on your party. You can find me on Flick and Reel. There's hyphens in between there. So Flick hyphen N hyphen Reel. Not as much lately, but I've still been posting some like gaming stuff. Like Mortal Kombat had a beta that came out last weekend, so put a little bit of that up there. Kind of doing a gaming focus while I'm waiting for everyone to come back in and start podcasting some more and stuff. But come in, hang out. You can also follow us on Twitter and stuff and engage and talk. And we just love talking about movies and things like that. But yeah, that's it.
And the Outlaw, the CEO of Outlaw Nation himself, he's also the COO, the head janitor,
the CFO.
Yeah, the CFO. Like the guy wears all of the titles at the Outlaw Nation, Mr. John Rocha.
I have a house cleaner. All right. Anyway, you can follow me at The Rocha Zez on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, The Outlaw Nation on Twitch. My YouTube channel, youtube.com/ John Rocha Zez, The Outlaw Nation there. We will be having our own spoiler review of Geek live at 4 p.m. PT. Is this going out tonight? Is this live now? Or is
it'll
this going
tomorrow? It's going to be Tuesday.
So, yeah. So later on at 4 p.m. PT on Tuesday, if you guys are available, come and hang out. And for our Geek Buddies spoiler review, we'll break it all down and we'll take your questions. So we'll hear from you all to see what you thought about the movie as well. In my podcasts, The Cinephiles and The Geek Buddies, of course, The Hot Mic.
Oh, The Hot Mic.
Jeff Snyder.
The Hot Mic.
Yeah, I know. Snyder and I burning shit up. It's crazy. The show's doing well, so I love it. But yeah, come and hang out with us there too.
Dropping exclusives.
Yes, Jeff is. Yeah, absolutely. And it's great to see my Finstock Exchange people. Fuck Jesse. It's great to see my Finstock Exchange people.
Well, we are honored to have you guys on. Thank you so much for being here. And please tune in next week, folks. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Apple iTunes. We love you all for tuning in. Have a good night.